I saw what it meant to be broke as a joke, but I also knew what it meant to be able to go home and eat steak. I also witnessed the ability to buy someone else that steak dinner, and that got me juiced. So that was immediate association. You own a business, they all want to work for you, because and you can afford things, and you can afford to help other people. So that's what being a business owner is. I guess that's what I'm going to be.
This is Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with your host, Tyler Jorgensen.
Welcome out to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio. I'm your host, Tyler Jorgensen. And today we get to have a legend on the show, somebody who has been kind of the man behind the man of several really cool entrepreneurial and business launches. He's a business growth expert who has worked with over 25,000 clients to double sales. So he knows how to make a good thing great. Welcome out to the show, Ted Miller III.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be here. Good times. Yeah,
so we were talking just as we were getting ready about the third, right? Whether it's TM3, yeah. Ted Miller III. When I was in middle school, I had two friends that had like the big numbers at the end. It was Philip V. Briscoe VII and Baltazar Garrigadobli VIII.
The eighth. Oh my God. I wanted to have the fourth.
At that point, I made it, I'm Tyler D. Jorgensen, the first.
The first?
And I signed that as my signature for way too long.
I wanted to have a fourth. I said it like this. I told my wife, I said, okay, so if it's a boy, we know what his name is. And she looked at me like, what? And I was like, oh yeah, Ted Miller IV. Absolutely. And yeah, she said something about hell freezing over. So his name's Tafton. We did not name him Ted the fourth, man. But I was confident. That decision was done. I forgot that I might have someone else's opinion to consider.
There was a veto. There was a veto in the works.
Yeah, the veto happened.
Yeah. So, Ted, you've been involved in a lot of really cool things, but if you zoom all the way back, when was that very first moment in your life that you realized that you're an entrepreneur?
Oh, it's easy. I mean, if you're not born with a silver spoon in your mouth, and if you've ever been in a place where it's been tough for your family, you may have heard, a Gen Xer would hear, money doesn't grow on trees. And so broke as a joke, I looked around and I see people that had money. So Theodore Miller, the senior, changed his name from Theodore Marushak. A bunch of Polacks running from Nazis come to the United States. And they want his brother went and did Polish sausage. Chicagoland area was a big butcher town. It's a bunch of cattle, right. Chicagoland area, a lot of meat. And they did very well. So they were wealthy. We saw what that wealth looked like at a distance. But my closest person in my life as a child wasn't my sister. She was 3 years older than me. It was my cousin. He was only 11 months younger. And he and I were thick as thieves. And his dad owned a construction company. And they all worked for that man. So I was on the job site at the age of 9. So I saw what it meant to be broke as a joke, but I also knew what it meant to be able to go home and eat steak. I also witnessed the ability to buy someone else that steak dinner, and that got me juiced. So that was immediate association. You own a business, they all want to work for you, because and you can afford things, and you can afford to help other people. So that's what being a business owner is. I guess that's what I'm going to be. It was so just
early
that
days. Early days, you saw entrepreneurship as the path to the life that you
were. Other than Top Gun had me convinced I wanted to be a fighter pilot, but because I wear these often, you know, and I have to squint to look at the board, I didn't have them then, but I was kind of already squinting to look at the chalkboard. And I'm 6'2", so people think I look small on camera because it got the camera kind of up high, but they, you know, I'm only 6'2". I'm not that big. I've had bigger partners. And, I just knew. I was like, I don't want to work on a plane. So the guidance counselor in eighth grade goes, what are you going to be? I go, well, if I can't fly a fighter jet, I'm a little worried about my eyesight and my height. Then I guess I'll be a business owner. He goes, what kind? I go, construction. Cause that's all I ever knew.
Right.
Cause my uncle owned a construction company.
Got it. And so what was your first jump into business ownership?
I tried to drop out of Purdue University. I was there for engineering. My dad worked in an oil refinery his whole life, lived and died there. And he told me, he goes, son, the person who makes more money than me, she's an engineer. So I highly recommend when you go to school, go get an engineering degree if you want to make more money. So I'm okay. Yep. And then I had no clue. I am not cut of the engineer cloth. So I'm begrudgingly going through this path. And I met this kid who got kicked out of a private Catholic college. And he was one of 11 family members. And make a long story short, he goes to buy me a beer. And I go, you've never had the ability to buy anyone anything your whole life. I mean, come on, you got 11 kids. He goes, no, I'm rolling in it, bro. I was like, you just got kicked out of college. How are you rolling it? He goes, I made 60 grand in the last 6 months. This is in 1993, 94.
Okay.
So it's good money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? So I said, who owns the company? What's his name? What's his number? Give it to me. I literally just called that guy up. I said, hey, I need to have a meeting with you. I walked in and I said, hey, I've been the job site at age 9. I know all these Yahoos you have working for you. They don't understand what a P&L statement looks like, let alone how to help you, be more efficient on the job site. So you're going to hire me. I'm going to run this thing. Literally what I told him.
Yeah.
He hired me and I started working there and I thought, okay, I'm going to do this business because, working for this guy is nice, but I'm going to run it. And I remember it's $2.2 million I needed in cash. And Tyler, I didn't have $2.2 million to do my own business. And retrofit light systems is what we're doing.
Right.
And so that's when I knew I needed to become an entrepreneur because I was only getting paid, 60 grand in 6 months was awesome, but it was not wealth. It was not by the yacht. It was not by the car. It was not the FU money is what my late partner, Chet Holmes, called it.
Right.
No matter what happens in life, if you've got FU money, you can just throw money in it and solve it.
Yep.
And so that's when I knew I needed to do it because I couldn't afford it on my own. And it took me a while to get there, but I got there eventually.
You mentioned Chet Holmes, right? The author of The Ultimate Sales Machine.
Oh, yeah.
And you've worked with some other big names. I would like to see.
But he's my number one. Like okay. He and I, we did $100 million together in the back of this book. If you don't have The Ultimate Sales Machine, go buy that book. I mean,
absolutely.
You've edified this book plenty of times, Tyler. You were didn't you help support when we rolled out the new edition? Was
yeah.
That was helping?
Yeah, we built their sales funnel and helped them kind of map out a launch.
As a marketing consultant, as a guru under his own right. Yeah, I recall Amanda looked for your help. So yeah, thank you in advance for that.
Absolutely. Awesome. So, you've had the pleasure of working with some really cool people and you're an expert of your own, right? But how important have strategic alliances been in your career? And what do you recommend to people who are looking to just like collaborate on a higher level?
Wow. God, so it's next to impossible to do. I mean, you've got to be better. So, because when you start doing strategic partners, sounds like I'm name dropping, but I literally along the way said, if I'm going to partner with anyone, I want to partner with the best in the world. And no one knew who Chet was. So when Chet and I did the thing, we crushed it. It was just me, Chet Holmes, Doug Wilder, director of operations, shout out. And then Lisa Cruz's assistant. That was it. That was the four of us in the beginning. We were broke as a joke for years, by the way. But we weren't. Like, we did like a couple $1 million. But when you have that many mouths to feed, you're splitting profits and stuff.
Wasn't going far. Your first few million go back into just figuring it out again.
We were just, Chet was such a smart guy. He started a new business. And I had enough skill that, okay, I'd go help make that come to fruition. And we'd start up and stop like 10 things. But they're damn near impossible. My first strategic partnership that we really landed like in a really big way was Tony Robbins. And that was only because I pioneered a whole sales methodology no one else could figure out. Just happened to be the top webinar conversion strategist on the planet. Found a methodology to lower the barrier of entry instead of hi, nice to meet you. You got 30 grand for consulting services. Came with a low ticket offering before everyone even knew what that was.
Right.
And cracked the code early. So I had to be the best in the world to warrant that. And Chet also was chasing that guy down for 10 years until that contract was signed. So it's not an easy thing to do because, yes, Jay Abraham, yes, Jay Levinson, yeah, Kevin Harrington, Shark Tank, yes, Robert Allen, No Money Down, all these great names. But you have to be so skilled to make that happen. I think too many people are acting like that's flippant and easy to do. No,
no.
You can maybe do some.
Yeah.
You are part of a really good minds coming together, mastermind of people that do really good affiliations. Your joint venture partnerships are steep, man. I mean, you got Robert Kiyosaki. That's the whole reason I went to work with these great minds. In his book, he said, you know, why are you paying to get trained by them? Because that's what I was doing, paying to go to their training all the time. He goes, work for them for free. And I'm like, well, I ain't gonna work for them for free because I'm good, but right. I'll partner with them. And that's where that seeded in my mind. And you're on their team. So
yeah.
You swing big. You've got a thing coming out or an interview or something with Robert Cialdini. Oh my gosh. Oh, the best when it comes to influence. And so those aren't easy to come by. Just a JV isn't easy. So right. I try to talk people out of it because too many geeks, pimple-faced gurus on the internet talking about how you need to automate everything, get wealthy over a weekend because you got some JV thing. No, you probably have to be a lot better than you think you need to be
sure.
to warrant that. But if you got that clout, when we shared Dream 100, I trained Russell Brunson on it. That guy had enough clout. He just did it.
He executed
brilliantly on the Dream 100, and he gives way too much credit to that methodology to help him grow from zero to like, I forgot what he said, how fast it went, but it was in like 3 or 4 years. I think it was $100 million in like 3 years or something. I don't want to misquote it.
Yeah.
He talks about it all the time.
Russell's entire first launch was built on Dream 100 to affiliate partners.
Yeah. It's not like Jet trained him, you know, that was me training him, you know. Okay. And I was glad to do it because he was just a dude, but he had this great partner, David, and he and I would talk about bolting on because that's what I do. I bolt on my sales methodology, my back end, which is coaching business coaches, helping entrepreneurs better implement proven business growth strategies and tactics. And that's why we partner with all these brands. I just bring in a team and skills that most people don't have. So if you're looking to do it, you've got to have something no one else has, something that they know they need, they can't have without you, and you could do better than anyone else. Like, then that's one sure-fired way to get there. And Tony really was not a big fan of going virtual like he is now because it's pre-COVID.
Sure. Yep.
And Russell had the ability to put butts in seats at seminars. And he knew if you put me in front of that many people, I'll get that many more people into my UPW. It feeds his machine called Robbins Research International, and it'll work. And he took off. And he did 10-year, good 10-year run. He just did his last Funnel Hacking Live conference. And Tony just spoke at that last one. So I want to talk you out of it.
Cool exit. No, you're good. I think that's good, though. I think it's important to know that if you're going to pursue these kind of things, that you need to have your saw needs to be sharp, right? Already. You don't go into joint ventures hoping that they're going to make you sharp.
It's a steel sharpened steel kind of moment.
Yeah.
100%.
One of the groups of people that you work with as CEOs and you help train them. What are some of the biggest gaps that you see with young CEOs? And I don't mean by age, but I mean, maybe they were an expert and they're starting, they're just shifting into their own business. Cause there's that moment where you have to switch from, employer, self-employed, right, to business owner. So what's that big gap that you see those types of founder CEOs having?
You know, it's tough. To speak to that founder, president, self-employed to business owner transition you just alluded to, the biggest gap there, hands down, is, you know, what we all learn from Michael Gerber and E-Myth, need to work on it, not in it, and build systems. But the problem is, in this book, he never told everyone what to work on or how to work on it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Ryan Geis really loved what we were talking about in the Ultimate Sales Machine. He definitely funnel hacked like crazy a lot of the things we were doing because he recognized, you know, I cracked a code on a thing and Chet really knew how to write a great book. And so he emulated a lot of it. And he went off and I think I remember him saying something, this is way back. I mean, I'm going back maybe 15, 16 years now. But when he was going along and he wanted to systematize everything, he locked everything down, had everyone document everything. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of money. And if you don't have a skill to build systems, what you do is you waste too much of your time and your money trying to lock down the way you do a thing. So what that means is you become less profitable. Literally, I recall him saying, I made way more money at 2 million than I did at six. And I may be getting these numbers incorrect, but I'm trying to cite it correctly the best I can.
Sure.
And I'm pretty, something like that, or maybe more money at two than even 10. But it's because police, a difference between a procedure and a policy is somewhat, a procedure is I'm great at doing a thing. I document doing the one thing. And this is the process from which I do it. Here's a procedure. Well, how do you make it a policy? You have to police it. And now you become the man. But the reason most entrepreneurs start their own business is against the man. F the man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't want to be the man, let alone, you know, work for the man. That's why I started this whole thing. So it's counterculture.
Right.
And they get stuck. So many of them get stuck where I talk about KPEs, key points of execution. Don't systematize everything. Give me your top three. One, two, three, too many. Give me your top three core elements that justify the existence of value in your business and really express the discipline. Chet called it PhD, pivot to discipline to determination, to really narrow down in those three areas and systematize that. Because the irony is so many small business owners, they want freedom. That's why they started their business.
Yep.
And the road to freedom is through discipline of systemization. And that buys back their time and their money. But most people that do it ignorantly, citing what Ryan Dice said, they just double down on policing. They document everything and it takes time and money away from the company. And now you're less profitable and you wonder why you don't want to keep growing the company when you're making less money.
Oh, yeah. And you're doing now the parts of the business that you hated, all the things you tried to get away from when you made that first step.
Exactly. And that, and then so they go back.
Yeah.
They fire everybody, they thin it down, and they go back into a more joyful, I tried it, it didn't work. Well, I don't know if it didn't work. It's just the way you did it didn't work. So I'm a big fan of KPEs, key points of execution.
I like KPEs as a kind of adjusted point to work on. I think that's great. One of the other big secrets that you bring, and you mentioned it with what you did with Tony, is webinars. What is working right now in the world of webinars?
Well, the word webinar, in 2008, I sent out a memo to my team. This is just before we partnered with Tony Robbins. Had about 100 salespeople. We had 100 coaches deep. Could never really get the consulting thing down. We were begging people to run that division like crazy. But at that time, probably had a dozen consultants. It blew up to 30 as soon as we signed the partnership with Tony. Hmm. And I sent out a memo saying, stop using the word webinar. Marketers ruin every good endeavor. I was going to curse. So I was just saying, that's what they do. They mess it all up. And so I use the word workshop. And now even workshops getting played out.
Sure.
And so here's the distinction. Here's what's working that I want to give. I'll give the people the credit to do that made it more famous by saying it better than me. They called it a tripwire. They called it a I wish I remember what he called it. I remember he called one a tripwire.
Okay.
And Perry Belcher just took a TM3 Ascension sales model, because that's what works, is hi, nice to meet you. They got 30 grand for consulting services. That's what you give after a 30-minute, you know, assessment, free consultation, discovery call. That doesn't work. This high ticket thing happens when you're on good times, when you got wind on your back blowing your sails and you're going rolling downhill, but that's not happening right now. People are unknowingly in a recession. They're not as self-aware that maybe it's worse than that, because US dollar is no longer what it used to be, nor will it ever be. And they're going to have to recognize that you can't do that high ticket. That died all 2024. That's been dead by 2024. So all the pimple-faced teenagers that are getting wealthy over big ticket sales, they're dead now already. So what's working is what's always worked, which is what I pioneered. I called it a webinar, coined that phrase, called it a workshop, might call it roundtables now. I don't know what name I'm going to use just to try to differentiate from all these marketers ruining a good thing.
Right.
Is instead of talking at people in a monologue, Tyler, what works? I said all that shit to say this, to have a heartfelt, I call it the heart of business, to where people can get your intent. Motives matter, not your neurolinguistic patterning techniques and all these hooks and special things that you do for your automated webinar crap, all that stuff. yeah, that might work, but motives matter more. Those who care more sell more. And if you can get a group size down to like 12 at a time, where you can genuinely connect with each individual, now you could turn around and have the efficacy rates that we have. We have over 30% for 20 years that people go through our workshops, they purchase our core programs. That's an insane percent, because I've, as you have partnered with a lot of gurus, I've seen their books and they all say one thing, and that's the best they did in a day or a week. But if you start looking at a year average or a 10-year average, I look at, I got 20 years of this, 30% conversion. That's crazy good. That's insane. Good. Most people don't believe it's plausible. It's awesome. It's only because we put their needs first. Add value first. And when you add value in someone's life, they always say, hey, how can I help you? How can you help us even further? And that's how we go into what other people call high ticket sales. There's no high ticket sale. Add value first and they just ask.
You mentioned earlier that one of the future guests that we have coming on the show is Dr. Robert Cialdini. He was speaking just this last weekend at the mastermind that I was at, and he said something that matches exactly what you said. And we were talking about the impact of AI in influence. And he said, one of the big trends that they're seeing is that as AI is kind of removing humanity out of the business process, that's leaving an opportunity or scarcity for humanity. So for any ways that
couldn't
you
agree with that fellow
felt and human and connected, that's actually like the market is craving it. And so, I love that. I love smaller groups, pouring value in first. It's a lot more natural.
Well, if you do smaller group, remember scarcity. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to do Robert Cialdini's description of a justification for experience, you add value first, law of reciprocity. I can go on for days.
Oh, yeah.
Every single one of his laws apply. One law I've yet to see him discuss yet, and I think he's going to get there with AI is going to force him to look at this data, is intent and motives. That there is another, what he may call a subconscious influencer, that it's a motive. And when people can witness in you what your intentions are, that they're calling it trust. They're calling it liking. They're calling it all these things.
Yeah.
It's deeper than that. It's because a bunch of dudes in business don't want to say the word love. So they try to come up with these other language, non-emotive languages, so we can try to go and be greedy and manipulate. No, just be awesome. Don't suck. Add value. Show that you care. You're probably going to outproduce everyone too. Yeah.
I think the law of reciprocity is one of the other part of humanity that we feel like we're missing. Everyone feels
who goes first?
A lot of asks right now upon them and their energy and their time.
Reciprocity. If you love first, right? It's love is not a thing you get. It's a thing you give. So maybe he has already done it with law of reciprocity.
We'll see. I think it might be wrapped in there, right? And sometimes there's elements that really just combine two or three of the other ones. But who knows what?
Yeah.
You also, in addition to being just having so many impactful webinars now, whatever the new name of them is, and helping people
that.
Your business can't thrive if at the end of the day you can't sell, right? So you talk about creating a sales vortex, right? What is the, you know, you just talked about some of the things leading up to the point of the sale, right? How do you get the person into a good position by giving first? But what do business owners need to know about sales, and how should they be approaching it differently?
Well, because there's two questions there.
Yep.
The one that's easier to find on my intellectual property is how to find true salespeople, that it's their nature, not that you have to nurture. That I think is a delta. If it's a, my team has a problem. So if it's a team issue, it's, were they born into that literally as a child, were they conditioned to want to be great at that? Is it their mode of operating? Do they come from virtues that are in alignment to things that warrant your culture and are going to increase likelihood they're going to influence another human being? Are they interesting enough to be interested in others? Are they gregarious enough and likable enough to build instant rapport? Are they confident enough in themselves so they can be confident enough in the product and service they're selling? If they don't have these fundamental elements, which is an identity as a leader, and a compelling future when they bought their product and service, they won't influence others. So that's if it's through a team. Yeah. I highly recommend they look for my intellectual property on how to recruit sales stars. But if it's an individual on selling, Yeah, they just probably haven't really thought through it in its entirety, like the things that you train on. Having steps in your process, knowing what they are. I'll see people having a great conversation and someone gives a green light, like a buying question, like a buying sign. Tyler, you know, it's, oh yeah, that sounds really good. I can see myself when, you know, doing that here in the very near future.
Right.
And so what they do is they go back and now they want to talk about their dog and their kids and they go back in the sales cycle to rapport because they're like, oh my gosh, he likes me. Okay, well, let's stay in this fun zone of liking because I don't want to move from this comfort zone. And they don't go in and explore more understandings of why they really need their service or reasons why they need to take action now or preempting competition or getting them to say what that would be worth to them. They don't move through a sales process because they chose to stay ignorant of what the sales process should consist of. That's shame. That kills me because that's why the guy that makes the best Philly cheesesteak in town is like always broke as a joke. Right? You know what I mean? The best dentist, best kept secret in town. Right. That's why they have yet to express enough discipline to explore the professionalism of business called sales to understand what that should consist of. And they should go hire you and your firm if you're even still doing it. Because there's
It's fascinating how many people who are an expert in one thing struggle to ask for help in the things they're not an expert in. Right. That always is an interesting. It's like the paradox that happens as people become great in one part of their field. A lot of them, they think they can't not be great in everything. And it's like, it's okay to be the expert and need to ask for advice and coaching and help.
Yeah. I was asking a dear friend, I've used his service for 10 years. He was a client of mine for 2. So helped him increase his revenue by 100%. Then the next year increase his profitability 100% that very next year. Nice. And I hit him up. I was looking for something for 2025. I needed insights. I'm busy consulting, persuading, influencing my team to be the best leaders they can be, coaches, consultants. But sometimes you need a little checkup from the neck up. And he gave me a great idea, came vicariously through Jeffrey Hazlett, which is building out a board of advisors. We all know that at some point you need a board, they're going to mitigate your risk. But the board advisors are people like you on the front lines today, and they can relate to where you're at. But they're also going to be a great resource for referrals on a consistent basis. Yeah. And so that's been my top 2025 initiative, finding brilliant centers of influence to be on my board advisors. So I have those people in my proximity. I used to partner with these great people. And now that I'm not partnered with them, I miss them.
Yeah.
And I'm paying to go to their seminars. But when you pay, it's a completely different relationship now. Yep. And now I'm in a seat, not in a green room.
Yep.
And it's like, well, I'm not learning from the smallest distinction that's happening behind the stage. And so the board advisor has been the funnest thing I've done. I think in the book, I forgot what Joe Polish called his book. I'll look it up real quick. But he calls it ELF.
Easy, lucrative, and fun.
Lucrative and fun.
Yeah.
Board of advisors is ELF all day.
Yeah.
ELF all. I've never had more fun. I had a board advisor meeting just before the session. We laughed the whole time and had a blast. And it's generating revenue, even though that was not the intent. It's just like a byproduct of it. So yeah, it's really cool.
I love that. Now, I'm a big believer that we do all this part of business and this other stuff, but it's nothing if it's not also creating the life that we want to have. So what's one item on your personal bucket list that you're going to accomplish in the next 12 months?
Oh, that's easy. Time with the family. We're almost empty nesters. So we bribe our kids. Let's buy, like, next month, in 3 weeks from today, I'm going to be on a plane flight. Because I'm like, hey kids, I'll buy you a plane ticket if you want to come hang out with us during spring break. Because my kid's in college, you can go hang out with his buddies.
Oh yeah.
But when daddy's buying the ticket to Florida instead of in Portland when it's going to be raining.
Yep.
You know, so I have no issues
with those ethical bribes.
It's a total ethical bribe. They know my money is not their money. They're not inheriting that money, so they got to make their own. Yep. But I'm willing to use it the best way I can to get them in my proximity. So I always look for fun adventures. I'm looking for something I get to do with my daughter before she goes off to college next year.
Yep.
My son and I've got ours figured out, which is we go off-roading in the middle of nowhere.
Nice.
I take either my Porsche Cayenne or Ford Bronco, and we literally go to where like no one can ever get access to. and we had this insane off-road like trailer thing. And we go out in the middle of nowhere. We were over 50 miles away from the next human being. It was awesome.
It was a really cool time.
Yeah, I look forward to those moments to where we disconnect from tech, from service. I'm literally showering in the river, you know, with my son, the sun setting on it. They'll be with us till the day we die. And that's what we'll talk about.
Yep.
On the good and the bad times are those magical moments. And so that's absolutely on my bucket list is magical moments with me and my kids, let alone my lady.
Huge fan of that, man. That's what life's really all about. So totally echo that. Ted, thank you so much for coming out on the show. Please go check out Ted at tedmiller3.com. And learn from all the amazing resources and intellectual property he has out there. To my biz ninjas, wherever you're tuning in, watching, or listening, it's your turn to go out and do something.